Patrick Kinney, qui vient tout droit des États-Unis, qui n'est même pas jet-lagué, va nous parler de changement climatique, qualité de l'air et santé.
I hope you will excuse me for speaking in English for this session. I'm still working on my French, and I'm sure your English is far better than my French. Two of my colleagues, Mathilde Pascal and Augustin Collette, can help answer questions if needed or explain things further in French. And also Victoria Lichtbar is here as well. I'll be talking for a few moments about this project, which we call the AKIA project. The acronym is indicated on the top, and the purpose of the project is indicated. We were funded under the GIS-ADEME program for climate and health over the past couple of years. As you probably know, we have lots of information on the effects of long-term air pollution on human health, especially on premature mortality or deaths from cardiovascular illness and cancer, lung cancer. Those effects are very well documented in studies throughout the United States and Europe. We also have some evidence that long-term exposure to ozone may lead to premature deaths for respiratory causes. But that evidence is more limited. However, for the project, the AKIA project, we looked at both of these kinds of health impacts. This diagram gives sort of a concept for the motivation for the AKIA project. The idea being that health, santé in the middle, is impacted by air pollution and also by climate change, and that actions to reduce emissions can benefit both air pollution and also climate change, and that looking at these in an integrated way might provide some solutions that would be good for the climate and also for human health. However, we had to focus on the project mostly on just the relationship between pollution and health, and the ways that reductions in emissions could impact that through air pollution or through climate change. We didn't look directly at the impacts of climate itself on health, although I will speak about that at the end of my talk, if possible. One of the key objectives of the AKIA project was to assess air pollution-related health impacts in the future at different spatial scales. We had three spatial scales, a global scale at the top, a regional scale over Europe, and then a more urban scale over the Île-de-France down at the bottom. And some of the details of the modeling are indicated on this slide for those of you who are interested and who understand some of these things. But one thing to notice, for the global scale, we were modeling at a fairly coarse geographic grid space, something on the order of 1 to 4 degrees longitude and latitude. At the European scale, we were going down to something much, much finer, down to about 0.44 degrees, which is around 50 kilometers. And down at the Île-de-France scale, we were going as far down to 4 kilometers. So that we were looking at increasing spatial resolution, more detail as we got to smaller scales, smaller domains. Also indicated are some of the emissions, like the eclipse emissions, which I'll tell you a little bit more about in a moment, and also the climate scenario that was used. This diagram gives some idea of how we do the health impact assessment. The concept in this project is health impact assessment. We're not looking at observed relationships between air pollution and health, but rather using knowledge that already exists in the literature on that relationship to project future changes. So we take from the three scales, the global, the European, and the Ile-de-France scale, we take outputs from air pollution models under two different scenarios of emissions, scenario A and scenario B, and we look at the air quality projections from those models, and we look at the change in concentrations under future conditions versus the present conditions. We take those changes in concentration, the delta X indicated on the lower left side, along with some other information to project health impact. We also need to know, I guess I have it. Yeah, sort of. We also need to know the population that's potentially impacted. We also need to know the baseline death rates for cardiovascular and respiratory causes. And the third piece that we have to know is something called the concentration response function. The concentration response function, or CRF, is the relationship from the observed in the literature between a change in concentration and a change in the death rate. And we put these three pieces together to calculate the health impact using this equation. So that's basically the overall idea of the health impact assessment, taking the results at three scales and then putting them into a health impact assessment. So the integrated multi-scale assessment framework is summarized here one more time to give you, this is what we ended up doing. We had the global scale, the European scale, and the Ile-de-France scale. All of them were driven by something called the ECLIPSE future scenarios of emissions, and I'll tell you what these are in a moment. And we looked at various time horizons. We tried to be consistent, so at least we had the 2050 time horizon as a consistency across all three scales. And we also looked at some other years at the coarser scales. We looked at cardiovascular mortality due to changes in PM2.5 concentrations. And we looked at respiratory mortality in the summer months related to ozone concentrations. And we took those concentration response functions from the literature, and the citations are given here for the papers that we used to derive the concentration response function. Now, let's talk for a moment about the emission scenario. What is CLE and MFR? CLE is a scenario that assumes reductions in the future that are based on what is currently known about regulations on a country by country basis. So current legislation is projected into the future. The MFR scenario is a much more optimistic control scenario that imposes maximum feasible reductions in future emissions. So we have a more conservative future and a more optimistic future, the CLE and the MFR. And we carry those through all three of the scales, and I'll show you some results now. So at the global scale, I know it's very difficult probably to see these results. What we're comparing here is on the left side, all of these are PM2.5 related mortality maps. On the right side are ozone related mortality maps. The top one is the present day. The next one is the 2030s under the current legislation. And the bottom one is the 2030s under the maximum feasible reduction. And you can see that there's a scale that goes from blue to brown. The blue colors are reductions in deaths in the future. These panels are changes in the future compared to the present. This is the burden in the present time. So this is showing you where the deaths are occurring currently due to air pollution, and this is showing how the changes would look in the future under the CLE and the maximum feasible reduction scenarios. And I think you can see broadly from this global scale analysis that you can see where the problems are for particles and also for ozone in the present day, And you can also see that where the benefits might occur under current legislation. And you notice that some places like in India and in China, in the case of ozone, we don't really see much benefit in the future, and things are getting worse under current legislation because there isn't really legislation in those places to prevent future impacts. Whereas if we impose a maximum reduction, then we start to see benefits occurring in the China and India as well. Now, if we zoom down to the European scale analysis, these are similar kinds of plots. Just looking at the 2030s future scenarios under the current legislation and the maximum feasible reduction. And again, the right side is ozone, and the left side is particle changes. These are changes in cardiovascular deaths due to reductions in emissions that are modeled using the regional scale CHIMERE model across Europe. And you see basically that we're getting benefits both under current legislation, but even more benefits in the future related to cardiovascular mortality from the maximum feasible reduction scenario. And it's interesting now to compare. One of our major goals of the analysis of the project was to compare the health impacts that would be computed if you did a coarse scale, global scale analysis compared to a finer scale analysis. So we have global scale results for Europe here, and we have the regional scale model that zooms down also for Europe, and we can compare those two calculations for health impacts and see how they compare to each other. And that's what's shown on this curve, this set of graphs. On the x-axis is the change in cardiovascular mortality due to particulate matter based on the global model in Europe. And each data point is a country in Europe. This is the maximum feasible reduction, and this is the current legislation over here. On the y-axis is the European scale analysis for the same countries. And what you can see, if we focus, for example, on the right side, what you can see is that the European scale analysis, the 50-kilometer scale analysis compared to the global scale analysis, which was at a coarser geographic scale, you can see that the European scale analysis showed larger projected benefits across all countries, and especially in some of the countries here. But you see that the trend is very consistent, an increased benefit of future emissions when we calculate them at a regional scale versus the global scale. So it seems like the scale does make a difference. And this is consistent with some recent papers that have come out from some US studies that have examined the same question. Now I'm going to show you some results now focusing down at the Île-de-France. This is some results just of the PM2.5 concentration estimates. For on the left side is using the 50-kilometer regional model, and this is France depicted, the top part of France depicted on these pictures. On the right side is zeroing in on the Île-de-France region using the fine scale analysis, the fine scale model, and we're comparing. Here's the baseline. This is the present day. The next one is CLE in 2050. And the next one is the maximum feasible reduction in 2050. And I think what this shows is that you get a lot more detail, obviously, when you have a 4-kilometer model compared to a 50-kilometer model, where this is the Île-de-France here, and this is the Île-de-France here. And you have a lot more detail of analysis, which potentially allows us to link the air pollution projections more closely to baseline population and baseline mortality information, which is available at a much finer scale. So, for example, we can compare the cardiovascular deaths. This is the current legislation scenario for the Île-de-France. So this is the maximum feasible reduction scenario for the Île-de-France. These are changes in cardiovascular deaths per 100,000 persons on the scale here on the side. And you see that, again, the maximum feasible reduction is showing us more benefits. The benefits tend to concentrate mostly in the center of the Île-de-France, where currently the pollution levels are highest. So that's where the benefits are the greatest when you control emissions even further, especially focusing on reductions of motor vehicle emissions. And we did a similar analysis here comparing the regional to the Île-de-France scale. So in this case, we have the European scale analysis results for reductions in cardiovascular mortality on this axis. And then on the y-axis, we have the Île-de-France scale analysis. And we see a similar kind of pattern as we did when we were comparing region to globe. Now we're comparing Île-de-France to region. And we see that, again, there's an increased impact or benefit, really, calculated for using a finer scale, the 4-kilometer Île-de-France scale analysis, compared to the European scale analysis. So again, it seems like we're seeing a bias, an improvement in the calculation, or at least an increase in the estimate of the benefits if we go to a finer scale, which I think has to do with the close linkage between population density and air pollution concentrations, which is revealed more closely when you go to the fine scale. So to highlight some of the findings that we've achieved during the AKIA project, we were able to largely achieve our goal of developing a consistent modeling framework for assessing health impacts of particles and ozone across the three spatial domains and scales. We had some problems in that regard. We weren't able to link everything together, especially the climate scenarios. We're not able to link and drive all of the air pollution models in the way we would have liked. But I think we did achieve some success in achieving that goal. And as I pointed out, we saw some interesting differences in the health impact assessment results across scales, which highlights the importance and the value of multiple scales of analysis, and especially the value of going to finer scales, I think. We also, I think, importantly, in this 2-year project, which is a relatively short time, we did form a multidisciplinary team that was able to work together, quite a diverse team of people that range from global modelers to urban modelers to health impact assessors. And we learned each other's language, and we were able to work together. Now, because I think I have a couple of minutes left, I want to tell you one thing we didn't do in the AKIA project, and we would have liked to, is looked at also the impacts of climate directly on health. And as an example, I want to show you what we've been doing in New York. And this is a project where we are trying to look at a similar kind of framework, looking at future impacts on health, but through the impacts of temperature directly. Earlier today, Robert Votar talked a little bit about this issue. And I'm just going to jump to the health impact assessment. If we look at, historically, the relationship between mortality, the daily death rate over here, percent increase in mortality versus temperature, we see a typical U-shaped relationship, similar to what Robert showed earlier today. We fit this using a nonlinear regression technique, and we then use this relationship to project impacts into the future. We did it using a combination of 32 different realizations based on 16 global climate models and 2 IPCC emission scenarios. And we downscaled those to the Manhattan monitoring station. We looked into the future and compared those future time periods to a baseline period. And these are the climate models that were part of the analysis. So it's nice to have a lot of models so that you get to see the uncertainties and results. And the health impact assessment is very similar to what I showed you before for air pollution. But here we have baseline mortality, we have the change in temperature, and we have the exposure response function, which is the same idea as the concentration response function. The exposure response function here is based on this curve that I showed you a moment ago. So then what we get when we project the future by plugging in the future temperatures, we were able to show that winter temperatures, winter mortality will diminish because of warming winters. We also saw that summer temperatures would increase mortality. And if we added the two together on an annual basis, we calculated that there would be a net increase, even taking into account the benefits that occur in the wintertime, a net increase in deaths in the future because of warming temperatures. And we also were able to look by month, and we saw that, not surprisingly, there were increases in mortality in the summer months, decreases in the colder months. But interestingly, as a percentage change, some of the biggest changes occurred not in the middle of the summer, but rather at the edges of the summer. Months like May and September, which currently are not very hot, but will become hotter in the future. So based on that analysis, we reached some conclusions. First of all, we were able to associate mortality with temperatures in Manhattan. We were able to project the future. We saw some small decreases in cold deaths and larger increases in heat deaths. Of course, the impacts were greater for the warm. I didn't show you that, but the impacts were greater for the greater greenhouse gas emission scenario. Months differed. And also, it's important the caveat to note that there were a lot of limitations to the analysis. And one thing we didn't do is we didn't allow people to adapt in the future. And some of our current work is focusing on future projections of population change and also adaptation change. That's all I was planning to say, but I would be happy to open the floor for questions and also for Augustin or Mathilde to say anything else that they would like to add.
Peut dire quelque chose, Mathilde?
Yes, I was wondering, you were showing the decrease in mortality related to ozone and PM2.5 reductions, and I was wondering why you had such a large signal over Spain or Italy. I mean, it was very focused on countries. Yes,
this is just looking at particulate matter, not ozone.
There was ozone on the right,
PM2.5. Oh, this is ozone, you're right. Sorry, this is ozone on the right. Yeah, sorry about that. I forgot. I wonder if Augustin would speak to that. Well, of course, any given.
Augustin Collette from INERIS, but I think Mathilde could answer that question as well. So part of the reason why, if you were looking at actually changes just in ozone or PM2.5 maps, you would not see such boundaries, country boundaries. But when you're computing the health impact, you're weighting the exposure in terms of pollution by the baseline mortality, which are national numbers. And that's why the country boundaries stand up so much. Because of the mortality numbers. Am I right, Mathilde?
Yes. Is it just a bias based on this, or is there still another connection
to ozone space? Yes. I mean, here you see changes in pollution. So the change is larger. It doesn't mean that the pollution is large, it's the change is larger in these countries, but there is an additional factor due to the mortality.
Concentration change, we could distinguish the impact of concentration from this, the baseline mortality. And that would be a nice thing to put side by side so that you could, and then you wouldn't see the country boundaries quite so much. Well, just, we could show the maps of the air pollution change, but because, I mean, we're calculating mortality change, so the country-specific baseline mortality rate is an important input to that calculation. But we only have that data for Europe at the country scale. If we had it at the city scale or a much finer geographic scale, then those boundaries would no longer show up. But we're applying a constant mortality rate to the entire country.
It's not a bias, it's the in the health impact assessment. If you have a place where you have lots of people exposed to air pollution, is it working? It's better? So if in a country you have, or a region, you have more people exposed to air pollution, or if the mortality is higher in this country for any reason, like the, I don't know, maybe the health services are less efficient, or the background health is poorer, then the impact of pollution on this country and the benefits of improving air pollution in this country is larger than the benefits of improving air pollution in a country where the health is already very good or where there is no population exposed. So it's not a bias, it's really the interest of this exercise is to put together information on the environmental exposure on the population and on the background health of this population.
I have a suggestion though for Victoria, because we're putting a paper together right now, that for the supplemental materials, it would be nice to have one case where, say for Europe and for ozone or particles, in the supplement to put side by side the particle concentration change map, the baseline mortality rate map, and then then this map, and then we'll be able to see how those two pieces end up resulting in this picture. I think because it's an issue that comes up often, and I think it's important for us to explain where this issue arises, you know, from the baseline mortality rate. I think we could show that if we had the three pictures side by side.
So when you look at the difference of the impact of scale, you see so a stronger impact on local scale, but at the same time, I guess the health relationships that you use may also be more calibrated for that scale, or do you use different relationships depending on the scale, or what are the uncertainties?
The same exact health relationship at all scales. The health relationships come from epidemiologic analyses that were carried out at the urban scale, you know, city by city, comparing different cities to each other. So in a way, they're probably most appropriate because for that scale, since they were developed at that scale. That's something that we've thought about, but we don't know how to. We wouldn't know how to adjust that. I think that our results do suggest that some adjustment could be made if you're using a coarse scale analysis. You could adjust for this bias, the sort of negative bias that occurs in the health impacts because of the mismatch of the scale. And that's something that might be useful for people that are doing global scale analyses. Because global scale analyses are still useful sometimes to compare things on a broad scale. Or for lots of scenarios and, you know, things that you have available at a global scale. But I think it's important to understand how this bias arises and maybe try to adjust for it in future work based on this.
Bien, maintenant, Nicolas Viovi, du Laboratoire des sciences du climat et de l'environnement, va parler du changement climatique, pollen et allergies.